Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
To a Celtic state of mind, I'm Paul John Dykes. It's a Friday afternoon, and on the bulletin today, we welcome Lloyd Patrick Gibson and Peter McGackie. First time you guys have lined up together in the centre of the defence, so hopefully there's no Kobayashi Starfelt moments today. That is going to be a discussion point, obviously. But we're going to start off this Friday bulletin with a wee teaser. I will be joining Jackie McNamara on stage tonight. And I love Jackie. I loved every moment of his career. I thought he was a superb signing, 600 grand from Dunfermline. And I'd kind of followed his career before he came to Celtic because I took media studies at school and I went to high school in Dunfermline. And we used to get access to East End Park and go up on one of the grills, you know, one of the kind of scaffolding grills, and film the games and all that kind of stuff. And there was a couple of players that really stood out when we were able to look back on the footage that had been filmed. And one of them was a very young Jackie McNamara. So when we signed him, I knew quite a bit about him. I was really chuffed when we did. And he obviously went on to be something of a Celtic great, a Celtic legend, a Celtic icon. I'm not sure what the title is for a guy like Jackie. But anyway, we're going to give away two VIB tickets for tonight's event, which is more or less a sellout. There's no seats left. People can still come in and stand at the bar if they want, but there's no seats left, put it that way. However, if you're a VIP, you will be given one of the seats in one of the booths. So a pair of tickets for Jackie tonight. I'm going to ask you a wee question. Like, Jackie obviously was one of these guys, lads, whose old fella also played for Celtic, right? Jackie Senior played for Celtic in the time of Kenny Dalglish, etc. Now, Dalglish's son signed for Celtic but never ever played, Paul, so I'm not going to bring him into this question. Andy Lynch and his son Simon played for Celtic, right? They both played. Gordon Marshall, who you might remember, the goalie in the 90s, or you might try to forget him, his old fella, Gordon Senior, played for Celtic in goals. And the two Conroys, Mick Conroy and his old fella, both played for Celtic. So I'm going to ask you a question, right? Don't answer it, lads. Didn't give the question the answer away. Which current Celt had a father or has a father who also played for Celtic? Which current Celt's dad played for Celtic? That's the question. I want you to answer it by emailing me, because I'm able to get the ticket over to you that a lot easier that way. Email me at pauljohndykes@gmail.com. And two VIP tickets where you meet and greet Jackie, get your photo taken, you get a lovely signed item and all that kind of stuff. And you can spend the rest of the night listening to me asking the legend some questions. The question is, which current Celts dad played for Celtic? Lloyd, you've got a wee smile on your face. Do you know the answer to this one?
I do know the answer to that. I'm actually surprised I've not shouted it out, to be honest. But
good man.
There you go.
Good man. Email me the answer and I'll get the tickets along to you. That's how we're going to open up the show. There's plenty more to discuss. And the first thing I'm going to discuss is Peter and I were on the St Mirren game. And as part of my kind of research for the Monday Bulletin, I'm looking back on some of the comments, Peter. You were absolutely spot on pre-match. You said St Mirren were going to score a couple of goals, and you said they were going to get something from the game. What was it that made you, I'm not going to say lack confidence in the Celtic team going into that. We're playing at home. Obviously, we'd had a bad result against Rangers the previous week. What was it that made you doubt that Celtic were going to get a result last week?
Just the, obviously, the sort of drop-off in performances, and obviously, we're chopping and changing players. I just felt there was going to be communication issues. You've got St Mirren, who have proved pretty tough in the last few games we've played them. So they've been proven pretty tough. You've got Curtis Main up front, who's always a handful. So I expected them to probably score one or two. I thought we would maybe, with an open-ended game, because I thought St Mirren would come at us, that it would benefit us. We would maybe score three or four. But our performance was pretty disjointed. So it so happened that we conceded a couple and managed to scrape a draw. But I think in the last few weeks, everybody's trying to give a balanced opinion and try to understand that we're on the cusp of history. So you can't forget that. But it is a wee bit alarming, just the sort of like nature of the performances and stuff, and how big a drop off it seems to have occurred.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the drop off. We'll be talking about Angie's reaction to that. We'll also be talking about the secondary reaction in the press in relation to Ange being wanted down south. We're getting used to the speculation and the rumours, and we'll be talking again about the kind of like try to keep it balanced, Lloyd, because there's a lot of emotion riding on every single game that Celtic play. Yesterday, our title was basically speaking about the fact that we've been banging on about In Ange We Trust for 2 years. Isn't it about time we continually believe that in a situation like this? And I don't even think it's a period of adversity. Absolutely not. It's not anywhere near that. A couple of bad results, that's all it is, right? A drop-off after we've won the league. But people were reading into my title and saying, you shouldn't be turning on Ange. And I wasn't. It's just people get so emotional that they're not even looking at what it is you're saying. And they certainly weren't watching the podcast that we discussed it on. So with regards to the drop-off then, we'll be talking about Ange's reaction to that, Lloyd. And I'll go back to the Celtic versus Liverpool testimonial game, when Jock Stein was in charge of Celtic, Bill Shankly was in charge of Liverpool. And there was a banquet, because it was a testimonial, there was a banquet before the game, and there was a big speech, and Jock Stein said that Celtic don't play friendlies. It became something of a famous quote. Bill Shankly quickly retorted that Liverpool don't play friendlies either. And when you're looking at these last few games, I think what's occurred to me, if I didn't already know this, there are no such things as meaningless games when it comes to Celtic either.
No, there's not. I've always kind of seen it like that mantra as well, where Celtic don't play friendlies. Pre-season friendlies, I don't like to lose any game. Yeah, I certainly don't like to watch Celtic lose any game. So the last 3 weeks have been a bit disappointing with the performances and obviously the results. But when Ange's chopping and changing the players, then you can kind of expect a little bit of drop-off as well. So these things are going to happen.
They are going to happen. I'm going to start off then with Ange Postecoglou, right? We all know about the journey that he's had at Celtic. Many of us have looked at the journey that he had before he came to Celtic, an incredible journey as a wee immigrant. I mean, that picture of him with the number 24, with his immigration number and everything, it really just pulls at the heartstrings. And many of our fan base can really relate to that, because obviously our ancestors immigrated from other parts of the world and specifically Ireland. So when people say, Peter, that Ange gets it, it's not just one of these cliches, is it, that he gets the club and all that. We've seen so many people in the past supposedly getting it. You know, Brendan Rodgers talking about being born into Celtic, Ian Wright coming up and kissing the badge after he scores against Kilmarnock. We've seen all that before. But when Ange says something to you, you believe it because you understand that he has been through a journey very similar to our football club, hasn't he?
I think I've not really had a connection as much with our manager since probably Martin O'Neill. So that's a good 20-odd years since that happened. Obviously, it was amazing under Rodgers, but so obviously the time was soured a wee bit. And it just didn't give me that sort of feeling the way Ange gives you that sort of feeling. Like, it seems to just understand what we know the club is. Mm-hmm. He comes in and he gets it, and he understands the sort of history of it. And it doesn't need to be told, and he's not like pandering to us. It came across the world. He knew the opportunity that Celtic provided him, and I think that he wants to give back, and he knows if he can make an impression maybe in Europe, and if he can leave a long-lasting legacy, he's hopefully going to win a treble. He's already won a double. If he stays and wins more, he will go down in history as like one of the best managers we've ever had. And I think he sees that, and he knows that you can go here, there and everywhere. You can get money. Will you be really lauded and praised and appreciated by the other sets of fans the way you are at Celtic? You'll be remembered forever at Celtic. Maybe at other clubs you won't be. And I think I just think he buys into it, and he understands that aspect. And I was listening to a sort of interview maybe a couple of years ago, and he was talking about he thinks he maybe has 10 to 15 years left in management. And if that's the case, then there's no reason for him to ever think of leaving too early at Celtic. I think personally, in my own view, everybody's saying if we can get one more season, I think he's going to stay for like 5-6 seasons. But that's just what I think, because I think he wants to give Sel a really good number of opportunities in Europe and progressively get better, like we always say. So he really gets it, and we've completely bought into him. And the main thing is that he's winning. And listen, anybody that wins, they're going to buy into, but you've got the added sort of value of him knowing what to say, when to say it, and playing the media just perfectly, and saying and keeping the fans under, like, you know, we know that he knows he's got it under control, sort of thing. So I one of the best managers, even up to this point, that I've ever seen. So if he stays even longer, then he's just going to go down as a great.
Absolutely, yes. And I look back on some of the managers. In fact, at various times, look back on the managers who, have been at our club since I started supporting Celtic, which was basically, in a period when Celtic were still looking towards doing something in the early 80s anyway, outside the Scottish game. And then that didn't come back in, like, Peter mentioned Martin O'Neill, didn't come back in until then. And I think Ange Postecoglou, more so than some of the other managers I've watched Celtic under, does have an aspiration to chip away at this European dream, this ambition. And I think that's massive. I also look at things that are said by managers. And I remember, for example, Ronnie Dyla. He said a lot of things that were right. He said a lot of things that, on the basis of it, you thought, right, okay, I can buy into this. He spoke about a vision. He spoke about a style of play. And whether or not, all the players bought into it, I think might have been the issue with Ronnie. But eventually what happened was, if you look at some of his later interviews, he starts talking about, and if that isn't what you want, and he's talking to the wider fan base, he's maybe talking to even members of his squad in a way, he says, then I'll just not be here. I'll go and work somewhere else. And I remember him saying something along those lines and thinking to myself, right, this isn't going to last much longer. Then you had that infamous Brendan Rodgers interview when he starts talking about Terminado and all this kind of stuff. It's like, oh, great. So you can speak another language, Brendan. Brilliant. You're so intellectual. And of course, he was paving the way for, his eventual departure from the club. One thing's for sure with Neil Lennon, you never ever got that from him, because he was never going to give up. By the way, that was part of the undoing, I think, in the end. But if we look at some of the comments Ange made after the game, right, and he was questioned again, because he must be getting sick of getting asked the same questions. And by the way, James McKenzie, as we sit here right now, our very own James, is in a press conference with Ange, so hopefully he doesn't get that 20-yard stare from him. And Ange said, it's just my way of doing things. He was talking about rotating players, you know, switching off, if you like, after we've won the league. But I found this quite interesting, right? Do you want us to win the league by 20 points next season then, right? So he poses that question to the pundit. And it goes on to say, we will strengthen as we always do. But there was a mention in there that, you know, maybe I'm not the manager for you kind of thing. It worried me a wee bit, Lloyd, because, mm-hmm. you know, you look at every nuance, everything that a Celtic manager says, and I'm thinking back to other managers where there was this moment and I'm like thinking, all right, you're on your way. And I'm not thinking that about Ange. But he must be getting sick of asking the same question time and time again, because it's quite clear that his kind of way of dealing with this is, we've won the league, these games are meaningless. But as Celtic fans sitting here, and I asked you the question earlier about a meaningless game, there isn't any such a thing as that. So there seems to be a wee bit of a conflict there. One of the only conflicts we've kind of seen in terms of the vision for the club since Ange came in. And let's be honest, it's minor. We've won the league, so it doesn't really matter. We're getting worried because we've got a Scottish Cup final coming up and our form has dropped off the edge of a cliff. Are we reading too much into these post-match comments, Lloyd?
I think at the minute we are, yeah. I fear for the person in the media who's going to ask Ange about getting linked with the Spurs job, to be honest, because he's just going to get that death stare.
Think wee James will do it? Do you think he's got the coots part to do it, wee James?
I really hope James doesn't.
Anybody who can pull off the jot of hairdo, I mean, he's obviously
maybe. If he does double them in a Bumblebee jersey, then he might get away with it. But
He's got some fibre.
He does indeed.
But someone will be told to ask that question today, Lloyd.
Yeah,
there'll be an editor of a newspaper somewhere who'll tell the journalist to ask that question and take what they will get when he or she does ask the question.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know. It's,
but I think that.
Sorry, I was going to say. Sorry, the thing about Spurs, it would probably worry me a wee bit more, because the name of Spurs, it's a huge club and a huge opportunity for a manager. But I just look at the way it's run and the people that he's going to be working with, and is he going to get, you know, the opportunity to implement the things that he wants to do? And while he get long enough, he would have to weigh these things up when he goes to take a job. And you know what he's like. He wants to renovate a squad and have a chance to implement his style. And that will get you the sack if you're not getting wins in the first 3 months to 6 months in England. Mm-hmm. So he would have to factor that in as well. If it was a club that was run well and going to give him a lot of time, and you maybe be a wee bit concerned, you'd be like, this is a good opportunity. But like, Spurs in name is a huge opportunity, but you have to sort of look at the ins and outs of what's happening with that squad and who's running it. And you're like, it's not that, maybe not that appealing to him.
No, you're right. And you look at some of the managers who have gone there with huge pedigrees in recent times, Peter, and it's not worked out for them. Ange will be looking at every single aspect of any offer or any interest that comes his way. And I think that this was the whole point of yesterday's show, that with regards to the keep the faith mantra, remember the keep the faith mantra during the going for the 10 season, right? The lockdown season, where no matter how bad it got, we had loads of people saying, but keep the faith. And I was thinking, but you know, that's blind faith, because this isn't working, right? And obviously we got loads of kind of like criticism for saying it. But every single time something happened, so you had the Ballingolly, and then, you know, even
even Julian colliding with that post against Dundee United in December, everything was just racking up against us. The signings weren't working out. We brought in Shane Duffy, it didn't work. We brought in Ayeti, it didn't work. Barkas, it goes on and on and on. And then Dubai happens, and you know, in the comments section, every single day, keep the faith. And you're thinking, right, that's all fair and well, but we're falling to bits here. Mm-hmm. And that mantra, I thought, became like almost cliched, and it was almost like just wallpaper. It began to mean less and less and less than what it was used. But I'm flipping that now, because what I'm saying is the mantra this season has been, in Ange we trust. And for the last 2 years, that's what we've said. It's all right, Ange's got this. He's going to sort it out. And what I was saying yesterday is, this is the opposite. We actually do have to trust that mantra. We do have to trust that Ange knows exactly what he's doing here. And once you start breaking it all down, as the tagline says here, I think we've been through that process. You're having a look at the players that didn't have the game time that Ange wanted them to have. He obviously didn't want to risk them, Lloyd, leading into the, you know, the must-win games. Mm-hmm. Up to Tynecastle. Every game's a must-win game up to Tynecastle. And now he's thinking, I'm going to have a look at these guys now. But the two guys I don't think have had the game time that he might still want to have a look at, and it might happen tomorrow, so this might contradict the point, are probably David Turnbull and Stephen Welsh. So we're going to have a wee chat about that as well. But in terms of the mantra then, is it just about time we thought, look what the guy's done, let's just trust on him, we're going to be all right, we're going to win the Scottish Cup and the treble, and then we're going to go and strengthen, as he said in that interview, we're going to go and strengthen in the summer. So we continue as normal. It was just a few results in games that had no bearing on the league title. So does it all come down to emotion for you, Lloyd? It's just people getting over and emotional about it.
Yeah, we can read too much into it. Obviously, French players and that have had minutes and they've maybe not performed as well as they should have done. But at the same time, you said something quite interesting there about maybe two players who might get a look in. And I really do believe Stephen Welsh might be in for a look in, especially for tomorrow and also the Scottish Cup final, especially with the way Kobayashi's been playing. So that's an interesting one.
I think it is, right? Because I don't know if he was fit enough, but when Awata was played at centre-half, I thought that was maybe an opportunity, right, to bring in Stephen Welsh, get him a game, and try and get him back up to some kind of match fitness. Now, I'm going to try and get as many of your comments up on the screen as possible today, because part of the programme, part of the show is getting you involved and engaging with people that, unless you come and see the live events, we don't tend to get to meet you all that often. Celtic follower, you're on the YouTube channel. You're drinking from what looks like a Celtic mug. That's the done thing. And I keep showing this one off because it's my current favourite. Look at that. Carlton boy, Tommy Burns. And that was from the boys at Social Recluse. Absolutely tremendous. Afternoon all. Let's hope we play as close to a cup final lineup tomorrow and finish the league success with a win. Now, trophy day, if you've won the league maybe four games before, can be something of a damp squib, Peter, generally, right? Because you've won the league. And someone pointed out the other day about Aberdeen beating us 1-0. Remember when Shea Logan was like behaving like he just won the Champions League and all that. So you sometimes get that, and it doesn't really matter as long as you get the trophy and the season's finished. Tomorrow's a wee bit different though, eh? Because we're now looking at that thinking, right, this is the last chance to show us that you're back into good form for the cup final. I don't want to think about the possibility of doing the post-match tomorrow and we've played really poorly and we've not won the game. But we are up against a team in Aberdeen who have been revitalised under Barry. It's been a strange season for them, but they've been revitalised under Barry Robson. They're firing on all cylinders as much as they could possibly be firing this season. So we've come up against a real challenge in our final game. Trophy day is no longer about just seeing the trophy. It's about making sure that the champions are playing like champions. The two players that I mentioned then, Peter, do you expect to see them feature? Would it be too much of a risk to start them, do you think?
Well, what was happening with Welsh? Was he injured, did you say, for the last few games?
He's been injured, but then he was on the bench against Hibs.
It would surprise me for him to start. If he was going to get a game, I thought it would have been one of the other games. I don't really fancy him getting thrown in one game before the cup final and expecting maybe to do anything to, you know, get into that team. I think Ange has probably got a couple of scenarios in his head of players that he wants to play in that position. And I don't think Welsh will be in it. So, I mean, he could give him a game. I don't expect it, to be honest. I would, again, I don't exactly know how he's going to approach this game. He would probably go strong-ish, but at this point, I mean, we've already sort of had the big drop-off, so are we really going to get back up to full speed, you know, in the league when it's won and stuff? I don't know if we will. I do expect us to win and concede, so I reckon like 2-1, I think, in my head. So I've thought forward, and I think it'll be 2-1 to Celtic, and then it'll be 3-0 in the final. I do think we'll pick it up in the final. I think he'll play strongest team, but I think tomorrow he'll probably go with Kobayashi, Starfelt, Taylor, Ralston, and maybe bring a few players that he's... I would start Johnson in the final, so I think he would try and get him on for about maybe 20, 30 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if he just maybe picked a different sort of team each half, because I know we want to we play well and it's a celebration, and it still will be a celebration regardless of what happens. I mean, what a season. If you told us at the start of the season, listen, you're going to be one game away for a treble, but you're going to lose or drop points in the last four meaningless games, you'd bite somebody's hand off. So you have to sort of get it into perspective and remember that. So I think he'll still tinker a wee bit, look at some players. And but the disappointing thing is, you've got, let's say, the fringe players coming in these last three to four games, but I don't think they've been helped by the sort of first teamers as well, because
absolutely
they've mm-hmm. been, the drop off in them has been ridiculous. So mm-hmm. they're not showing the levels that they usually show, and if they do show the levels, then it might sort of cushion the blow for bringing Kobayashi, Bernabe, Ralston, Owen. Do you know what I mean? Like, they would be introduced to a functioning team, whereas they've sort of been thrown in a dysfunctional team that isn't playing to the levels that we're used to seeing. So that's also sort of compounded the problem a wee bit. But So I think he'll go, it wouldn't surprise me, a few changes probably, but I do expect us to win.
You know, my big concern, I've actually got one concern, just the one, right? And it's who partners Starfelt at centre-half. Now, I totally agree with you, Peter, in that whoever comes in, Starfelt should be talking them through that game. Starfelt mm-hmm. becomes your Carter Vickers at that stage, and he's got to be the rock, you know, in the defence. Dysfunctionality within a defence when you're throwing it together, you know, is, you know, there's so much risk with that. When you throw in Bain for his first game in 2 years alongside Ralston, who's not up to speed, Bernabe, who hasn't proven to me that he's a defender yet, you know, I just think that four of those five at the back the other night were dysfunctional. And then you put them in, you're not just going to get a unit that's going to start working straight away. So to be honest with you, the signs were there when you seen the lineup coming out. But the reason that Kobayashi is the biggest risk for me and the biggest concern, right, is that regardless of the performance by Bain the other night, we know what Bain can do, right? We've seen him playing well at Ibrox. You'll remember the game he played really well at Ibrox. We actually seen him playing well at Easter Road the other night. We actually did see him playing well to a point. So we know what Bain can do. We know what Ralston can do at right back. I don't think he's anywhere near his best form at the moment, but we know what he can do. And if Johnston comes in, we've seen him performing really well as well. Left back, Taylor, solid. Starfelt, solid. You know that, right? We also know that Starfelt's got an error in him. We've seen it at Ibrox. But with Kobayashi and Bernabe, and I don't think Bernabe will be part of the plan for the final, but Kobayashi particularly, we haven't seen enough to suggest, yes, but we know he's a good player. Now, we trust that he's a good player, Lloyd, because, you know, he's been handpicked from a plethora of Japanese players that Ange knows about, and he's picked this fella and he's brought him over. And he's kind of taken his time to bring him into the team. And this is the opportunity to bring him in. But we've not seen a performance. We've not seen a standout performance by him. At the end of the game, we've said, what a player we've got in our hands here. Or even we've seen potential glimpses. Like Haksabanovic, we've seen potential there. I've not seen anything yet in Kobayashi. And that's what concerns me. Does that concern yourself? Is that why we're even thinking about Stephen Welsh?
Yeah, it does concern me a little bit. I think he just gets bullied off the ball a bit too much. He's... To me, what would suit Kobayashi maybe in the summer would maybe go and maybe doing Chris Iredon and start bulking up a little bit more, getting a little more experience. Because to me, he's just not there at that level at the minute.
And he's only 22. So, I mean, it's not a suggestion whereby it's been a failure. It could be part of his development. I think it all comes down to what we do in the transfer window, to be honest with you. But that is the one player. If we go into tomorrow's game or if we go into the cup final and there's a slightly different forward line, be that, you know, Maeda drops out and Abada, well, he'll not be playing tomorrow. Maeda drops out and Abada comes in, or in the midfield, you know, if let's say, Hatate or O'Reilly drop out and Awata makes an appearance, I don't really have much concern because you've seen every one of the players I've mentioned there playing well and playing well as part of our functioning unit. But we've not seen Kobayashi doing that yet. I also think that, and again, this is the concern, this has the concern, I also think what Peter says is right. You don't throw a player in like Stephen Welsh, who's barely played this season. I think that you're asking for trouble there. Now, we will be talking about some positive stuff as well, in case everybody has gone, bloody hell, Friday afternoon, and we're getting the doom and gloom. Let's talk a wee bit about the TIFO, tomorrow's TIFO, right? We know the great work that the Green Brigade do, and they should be getting every bit of credit for that, you know, the charitable donations and all the efforts that go into that, but also the efforts that go into the TIFOs, right? And I just think that, you know, when you look back, Peter, on the football culture in Scotland, it wasn't that long ago that TIFOs just weren't a thing. You never ever seen it. And I think what the Green Brigade have done brilliantly is they've cottoned on to some of the exploits across different European leagues, and they've thought, what makes the fan experience better? And they've obviously brought some of that into Celtic Park. And it's now something that has become the norm. Big European nights, you expect something. You're actually going to the game wondering what they're going to do. I'm wondering what they're going to do tomorrow. The effort, the money that goes into it, the collective effort is astonishing. And tomorrow it's going to be another spectacle, Pete. And I just think, like I said yesterday about the Lions, every so often you've just got to tip your hat to the Green Brigade and say, superb work, really looking forward to what you've actually got up your sleeve tomorrow.
I know over the years, I think I just sort of maybe went to a game or switched it on to TV and seen a full stadium TIFO and just sort of didn't even know where it came from, because I wasn't really that interested, but like I didn't really take a lot of I don't know the word. I didn't pay a lot of attention to how it happened or what went on with it behind the scenes and who organised it and stuff. So I actually find out how much work goes into it. And I mean, to fill out almost 60,000 seats with a full stadium TIFO is absolutely crazy. But I expect, and they never disappoint. Like I love when maybe Rangers Celtic games and they put something up and you just don't know what they're going to get, so it's quite exciting, and it never fails to hit the mark. So I think the team deserve a lot of credit this season, and Ange deserves a lot of credit, and I'm sure that the TIFO will go a long way to pointing that out to them. And yeah. It'll look amazing with that stadium full. So it'll be a sunny day. Aberdeen beat them. Full stadium TIFO going into the cup final for next week. It's going to be fantastic.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I was talking to someone recently who's in your game, Peter. They're in the, you know, the acting and filmmaking industry. And he was talking about, he was chatting to Cillian Murphy. Every time I say Cillian, I'm going to say Sheridan. It's Cillian Murphy, right? Peaky Blinders. I got into it very, very late and then became obsessed with Peaky Blinders, right? Do you like it, Lloyd?
Oh, I love it.
Oh, it's amazing.
I'm obsessed with it for the start.
It took me ages. No, because I always knew I would like it. I just never had that time to actually, you know, delve into it. And I eventually did, and I loved it. But obviously, there was the TIFO that the Green Brigade did, and it was a nod to Cillian Murphy and his character in the Peaky Blinders. And this producer stroke director had this opportunity to speak to him. And of course, the first thing he says to him is about the Green Brigade and Celtic. And Killian Murphy's not a football fan, right? He had no idea that it had happened. Mm-hmm. And the wee fella was gutted. Big shout out to you, by the way. I love that kind of thing. But the TIFOs are incredibly put together. And when you see other teams trying it and failing, I think it's good for a giggle, but it also shows just how good a job the Green Brigade do as well. When you look at that, Lloyd.
Oh, it's some amount of effort and work that goes into it. I mean, you look at the displays that they've done for the Barcelona game, and even at the start of this season, we started the season off at home to Aberdeen with a full stadium TIFO, and tomorrow we'll end the season, well, the league season anyway, with a full stadium TIFO against Aberdeen. So really, really good for the Green Brigade to organise that for tomorrow.
And you know, the thing about that as well, I've had people coming over to Celtic Park, primarily from Germany, where they come over and they've got this idea in their mind what Celtic Park's all about and what they want to see. And they want to see, they come to a game, we were playing, I think it was Hearts on a Sunday or something like that. It was a game where we wore the 125th anniversary kit, the white one, with the green and black striped socks, hoop socks, Samaras scored. And they think every single game we sing Walk On. You know, people that aren't from Scotland, they think that we sing Walk On, and they think that they're going to see the huddle, and they think they're going to see a TIFO and all this kind of stuff. So it's created this almost a myth, a mythical element around the experience of coming to Celtic Park. Full credit to Green Brigade. I'm really, really looking forward to what you've got up your sleeve tomorrow. And by the way, when they've done the Celtic End thing recently at the Celtic women's game, it was just sensational. Claffs, by the way, Peter, you said almost exactly the same as us earlier on, Claffs 1978. If we were offered this position at the start of the season, we would have snapped their hands off. We just need to trust in Ange and their players for one more week. Hail, hail from Corby. I've never been to Corby, but I hear that there's a huge Celtic element down there. So thanks for that. And Patrick Harold, you're back in. Afternoon, comrades. And afternoon to you as well. Rob Lilly, looking like a good job we didn't get Big Ivan Toney now. Shame about not getting John McGinn, as he is a cracking player. $50 million for Jeremy Frimpong. Football, EPL football, has gone mad. The reason I bring that up is when you look at the figures, there was a comment just yesterday by our ex-striker Chris Sutton, who I think is still one of the guys worth listening to in Scottish media, and he's talking about the fact that Spurs would be a huge draw. Now, yesterday I had heard the rumour, but I can only call it a rumour, that Spurs were interested in Ange Postecoglou. We didn't really labour the fact, though, Peter, because, you know, I think a lot of the time these things are sensationalised anyway. And as a Celtic kind of show, we don't really want to feed into that because it's the last thing that we want. But when Rob Lilly points out the money, Chris Sutton talks about it being a huge draw. You do take it seriously. It's not like you're dismissive of any interest. We know that even Kieran Tierney, the one guy you never ever thought would chase the EPL money, even Kieran Tierney left, you know. And that was a bit of a slap in the face. It can happen. I don't think it will happen. How confident are you that we will see him at the club for the next 3 or 4 years, like you suggested earlier?
Like I said, when it happened with Rodgers, I was a wee bit pessimistic and put my faith completely blindly in another manager. So when Ange came in, I was like, right, well, let's just see how he does. But I've just went, you know what? To hell with it. I'm all in. And I trust that he's going to stay. So if he doesn't and I look silly, then that's on me. But I trust that he's going to stay. I suppose the concerning thing is, but it's like no one knew who he was when he came in and everybody sort of laughed. He's going to be away by Christmas. And all of a sudden, Rangers fans want him at the door because they know how good he is. The links down south are getting heavier and heavier each month that goes by. Like with bigger clubs, it may be bottom of the league, EPL teams into mid-table, and now we're getting up to like sort of Spurs level. But like I said, with the Spurs thing, it would be more concerning to me if it was maybe a top four, or probably top four, because I don't think the way Spurs are run is really conducive to Ange Postecoglou. I don't know. The one concerning thing is, but again, this is what people read into, and they put two and two together and make like six. But I think there was like an Australian guy that's just went into Spurs. And I don't know if he's like a type of football director or something. I think he's got ties with the Man City group that maybe Ange had worked with. So maybe there's a connection, and maybe that's why journalists are just putting two and two together and thinking, oh, we'll link him. But like I said before, I've went all in on Ange Postecoglou, and I'm just going to trust that he's going to stay. And it's weird because I would usually be quite worried with these links, but I don't actually feel that worried.
No. Well, here's the thing, right? You're a news source, and you now understand how that works. So, for example, every single time an EPL job comes up for grabs, if they link Ange Postecoglou to the job, they will get links, they will get traction, they'll get people talking about it, right? People looking for their stories and generating more and more traffic to that particular story. So what you're saying there is right, Peter. I mean, Ange Postecoglou came out the other week there and spoke about the amount of people he had seen, the amount of names he had seen in terms of signing targets. And he basically scoffed at it, Lloyd. You know, he was like, he said, miles off. And this is what we've always got to remind ourselves of. Yes, it's a worry. None of us want it to happen, but always in the back of your mind, remember that they are trying desperately to get as much traffic to the story as they possibly can. Ange Postecoglou, fill in the blank, and the blank being an EPL club, will get loads and loads of traffic. And that was the main reason we never really jumped on the bandwagon yesterday, because at the end of the day, we don't know what's in the story. Would they be interested? Of course they would. He's a phenomenal manager with a vision. Would he be interested? Not the now, I don't think. Absolutely not. And I cannot wait to hear James McKenzie asking him that at the press conference as soon as we're finished this particular show. Magnet 67. Great to see James getting a testimonial. Well deserved. Well, another man with a testimonial was Jackie McNamara. He got a testimonial. And the only one after him so far has been Scott Brown. There's been a lot of benefit games, a lot of charity games, Lloyd. But I think James is deserving of a testimonial, right? And Callum McGregor was speaking recently about what he does behind the scenes. And, you know, I don't like the idea, and I've heard it so often, Scott Bain is good around the place. You think, really? James McCarthy, good around the place. Aye, but we gave him a 4-year deal. Surely he's bringing more to the party than that. But when you hear that Jamesy Forrest is good around the place, well, he's also, you know, created history with Celtic. He's provided goals, assists, match-winning performances over a 14-season period. No one is more deserving of a testimonial than James Forrest in my book. What's your take on this, Lloyd? Is it a swan song, or do you think he will continue at Celtic until he hangs his boots up?
I think he may continue until he hangs his boots up. And it's nice to see like Callum McGregor and James Forrest come through the academy all the way through to the first team, being up there in the ranks of Billy McNeil and all that, multiple honours that they've won at the club, and then go out maybe with a swan song and then still be successful, right enough, but at the same time, I wouldn't like to see this. He's good around the place all the time, because that's just wasting wages on players that don't contribute anything, where you could get more for those wages. So Bain and all that being good around the place means absolutely nothing to me. Decent players and I want success, but
I want him to be good around his kind of penalty box, mate. That's where I want him to be good. I'm not interested if he makes a good brew and he's a good cook and all that on a Thursday.
A good brew is decent, mate, enough, Paul, but at the same time, when you're a football fan and when you're a football fan, you're watching games, you want somebody scoring goals and creating goals. So
exactly. And incidentally, just as I was driving into the studio this morning, Peter, I was thinking about where it is, where specifically it is that we should strengthen. I seen some ridiculous comments the other night after the game. People were talking about rebuilds in the summer. Rebuilds at Celtic. We're about to win a world record amount of trebles, right, a week on Saturday. There's no rebuild. There's absolutely no rebuild required at Celtic. What there is we need to get rid of the non-contributing players. I don't like to call them dead. These guys are human beings. They need to find clubs and continue with their careers, but it will not be at Celtic. And I think that, and I said in one of the shows last week, it could be up to like 14 players. And by the way, it might even be more, because there's so many players not contributing. But one of the guys in that figure for me was Scott Bain. He's just been given a 3-year deal. I'm thinking of the different positions, and I do think that we need to strengthen in the goalkeeper position to challenge Joe Hart. We need to get rid of the non-contributing goalies, of which at the moment there's three or four. I look at the right and the left back situation. I'm happy with the first picks. I'm not happy with the second picks. You then look at the centre halves and you think, right, okay, Carter Vickers gets injured and we're all at sea. You definitely need another centre half. You move into the midfield. I don't think we've got that kind of Tommy Rogic number 10 creative player who can unlock a defence. So we might need somebody like that. I think the position Jamesy Forrest plays on the right, we're lacking there, particularly if Abada's not playing well. And then up top, I don't think you can run with two strikers. Now, that's about seven players. And in order to get them in, Peter, obviously, you've got to offload everybody who's not contributing. Can you do it in one window? It's maybe ambitious. So I don't see it being a full-scale, massive changes. I mean, I still think your starting 11 is going to be very similar, but you're going to have a much stronger 16, 18-man squad going into next season. Would you be happy with that yourself?
Aye, well, Tom Rogic has just left West Brom, so let's get him back for a start. And he can follow the Tom Rogic position.
Aye, he can do the Tom Rogic role, absolutely.
And then, what was it, 3 years for Bain, so he'll be due a testimonial at the end of that, probably. Has he been in there that long? Aye, it's a bit wild, but we need to really, I'm sure the club knows this, they need to sit down, look at these players that are on the books and be honest with them, say, you want to stay, you need to go because you're not going to get game time. And I'm sure Ange will have told them this because I think he's like that. Like you say, there's a few positions I'd like to strengthen, and if we're going to buy into the way that Ange was talking about playing and building the club, it's probably an 18-month... We're going to see a big and quick turnover of players, so we might have to get used to that. And we've done it the same way for a decade, so maybe it's time for a change in the way we operate, and our mindsets maybe need to change in regards to that. I think that the turnover of players might not be as high as we think, but I think we could certainly trim the squad, and I think that we could add four or five quality into that's going to be around the first team. Mm-hmm. Like you said, if you break it down to the bare bones, am I confident going into Europe, which we are in the Champions League, with a potential defence of Starfelt, Ralston, Kobayashi and Burnaby? No. That will get absolutely ripped apart. So you need to strengthen in these positions. When Taylor was sort of like, hadn't sort of come into his own, and he was sort of maybe, a lot of the fans weren't completely convinced. To me, he was always a second choice, and if you had a first choice in front of him, then the quality would really rise, because you would be happy with Taylor coming in to deputise or start. But if you had a quality player even better than him in front of that, then that would really raise the level of the squad. So I think, listen, this is just sort of off the top of my head, and it's hard to get a good gauge because of what we've just watched. So there's going to be a lot of like people jumping to conclusions and having seen some players. But potentially a quality centre-half, maybe look at the full-back positions. Certainly think we need a striker because you kind of go in with just two. You need somebody to bridge the gap between Owen and Kyogo, and potentially another sort of dominant midfielder so that you can go away in Europe, you can go away to Ibrox and be able to really put in a solid performance, knowing that we're not going to concede. Because when you look at these other games that we've played with this open type of football with sort of second string of players, you really, really don't fancy not conceding a goal. If one or two or three or four, like you just think, when I watched the Hibs game the other night, I thought they might have went, I was worried when it was 11 minutes added on. I thought this could be like five or six, the way it was going, because the players had down tools. And when I see some sort of second string players just like not being able to defend first and foremost, and they clear the lines adequately, I get worried. So I think it would be a good opportunity to trim the squad and look to invest. And we have to invest because this is the point that you do it, that you maybe sell one big player and you take the money you've got in the bank. If you can get some people off the books, take their wages and invest in the money you may get in for maybe a top player, maybe 15 to 20 million, and invest that in four or five quality players that are going to be in and around the squad and really raise the whole level going into Europe.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And it's doable. See, this is the thing, right? It's so, so doable, right? So, like, we've been going on about the non-contributing players, 12 of whom were out on loan this season, Lloyd. A few of them will come back. They're a bit younger. They've probably got time on their side. But seven or eight of them, you get them off the books, and the wages that you're saving on seven or eight players, if you do bring in four, because some of the guys are on big wages. When you think about Barkas and Ayeti, even Sorrow, you know, guys we bought in, they're on decent wages. You move them on. You move on the non-contributing first-team players like Welsh. He's not going to get a game like James McCarthy.
No.
Last week I said like Scott Bain, but all the other goalies that aren't playing. And then you bring in the quality. So your wages for the deals on the four or five players are already getting put out there for guys who are not contributing at all. And then with regards to the actual transfer fees, you know, we've got money in the bank. You're going to have a budget if we don't sell anyone. But on top of that, there is that potential that you might sell someone. And if you're going to sell someone, it's going to be someone big. It's going to be a big transfer fee. That goes into the pot. And then you've got the Frimpong money, potentially the Tierney money coming in, some money from the Ryan Christie deal with regards to, you know, these legacy deals that we've got on players that we've sold on. So you do have a massive budget there. And you can go out and you can buy four players of that quality Peter's talking about. And I think the quality we're looking at here is CCV level. It is Jota level. That's what we're looking at. And if you bring in four and five, that kind of player, and you put them in. By the way, a Matt O'Reilly might present himself. And if he does, or a Reo Itati at £1.5 million, if you can bring a player like that in, you still do that. You don't write them off because you know that, you know, there are players out there with that level of potential. But you're starting to work yourself into a higher market and a higher caliber of player. And if you then do that, Lloyd, the team that you put on the park next season in the Champions League are going to do better. I mean,
yeah,
that sounds very simplistic, right? But it is doable, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it's doable. I completely agree with Peter. You're looking maybe four or five quality first team players coming in to challenge that first team spot rather than keep bringing these squad players in all the time, because the squad's getting far too big now. You're trying to bring through young guys like Vata and Summers and put them in the bench. They're not going to get game time. Not especially if you've got guys like Welsh, Bain, Haktabanovic and Owen, all that, and Awata sitting on the bench all the time. These guys need game time as well. So they need to look at maybe moving on. And then, as Peter said, you get four quality players in. You're looking at Champions League football next season. And if you go with that second string defence in Champions League, that is going to get absolutely battered. So you don't want that either.
No, you're right. But see, the players, there was a tagline just the other week there, and it was about guys like Haksabanovic, because we hadn't seen enough of him. Awata, Kobayashi. These guys weren't playing. Prior to that, Idiguchi you could throw into the mix. James McCarthy, you know, Scott Bain hadn't played this season until Easter Road. No wonder he was throwing balls in the net, right? Because they're not playing. Why now, Peter, we don't have a reserve league? Why now do Celtic not look at, you know, and I don't mean exhibition games. It could be behind closed door games. We need to do that more often. Why not take a team to Ireland three or four times a season and make sure that they're actually getting game time and organise that they're actually getting game time? Because these players are just not playing. And when you put them in, it's going to take them a long time to get match fit and then even longer to get Ange fit. I mean, again, something like that is quite, it's cost effective. You don't lose a shed load of money by setting up games like that. A lot of these guys, I think, are suffering from the fact that they've not had a lot of games. Burnaby probably as well. They've not had a lot of games. You set up a Celtic team, you play a side over in Ireland, and you know, you play Angie's way, and you get Burnaby into the way of playing an inverted fullback role, something I don't think he's got a grasp of yet. You know, you make sure Stephen Welsh isn't going to come in cold if you've got a big game, like he did when he played against Rangers in the 2-0 game. at Celtic Park during the lockdown. And yeah, you don't have a reserve team, but there's no bridge there for guys that are sitting on the edge of the, that team. Is that something the club should be looking at?
They could. It's not. I've never thought about that. But I mean, it could, and it would probably be make some money as well. You could sort of travel around, obviously with the Celtic badge, and play some interesting teams. And I'm sure fans would watch it and go to it, and it would give fans an opportunity, maybe in Ireland or elsewhere, to go and see them. So, I don't see the downside yet. Whether it's possible to do that, you know, during a league campaign, I don't know. And what if they get injured, haven't played these games? You could easily get injured in training, so you just call them like a bounce game sort of thing. But it's something that's interesting. I know what you mean. Players are coming in cold, but the way I see it is, like, if you're good enough, you shouldn't really need this. I get you can be rusty, but when I'm watching, for example, the biggest question mark for me is Bernabe, right? And I watched him the other night in the Hibs game, and he's played a pass. He tried to play inverted, and he played a pass miles behind Starfelt, and he just walked away with his like head in his hands. And I went, what is that? You're no reacting. You just seem so disappointed with yourself. And I was like, that sort of concerned me. I was just like, the quality for him to do this. And I seen good bits from him. In fact, better bits than I'd seen before. But I think at the end of the day, if you're a defender, you just need to defend first and foremost. So they should just be, I think the level, they should just be at that level, and they should be able to come into this team and perform. But it would be an interesting thought. And I certainly think few people would go and watch it if maybe some second stringers were to go abroad or go overseas to play.
Yeah, I mean, there was someone in the chat section earlier from Corby. There's a big, you know, strong Celtic presence down there. You go up to Oban, there's a huge big Celtic supporters club up in Oban. These people have to travel to see Celtic. They don't often, you know, get a visit from Celtic. And it's like, there must be an arena, there must be a stadium, there must be a pitch somewhere where a junior club, for example, where you could set this up and get them proper game time in a competitive match. Down south, some massive supporters clubs down at, you know, Reading, Wimbledon, Luton, big massive supporters clubs. And it's like, so, you know, you're doing that side of things, you're actually servicing the fans, but you're also getting the game time into players. And if it's somebody like Bernabe who's not quite getting the grasp of the position, then that's going to work in his favour as well. There you go. The ideas just keep flowing on a Celtic state of mind. And Joseph McGonagall's just entered another idea into my mind, and I really should pick up a crunchy on the way to Gracie's as well. Thank you very much, Joseph. It's been a while since I had one, but I do love a crunchy. Now, Danny boy, I think that the signs of initial enthusiasm began months ago, not weeks. The first half against Kilmarnock was okay, but Kilmarnock got wise in the second half and we couldn't inflict any more damage. That was the game, Danny, where it looked as though we were going to win by a canter, 7, 8, 9. Who knows how many we were going to score. Didn't quite work out. Now, by the way, I've just checked my emails. I can see them pinging in. How many quiz questions have we had answered? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We've got 7 entries so far. The quiz question today is, I'll be sharing a stage with Jackie McNamara tonight. Absolutely superb. What a privilege. It's at Gracie's. It's in Glasgow. It's 16 Candle Rigs in Glasgow. The doors open at 7. Jackie will be on stage at 8. We're giving away 2 VIP tickets, right? And what happens with the VIPs is you come at 7, you meet Jackie, you get your photograph taken, you get a signed item, and what else? You get to basically just hang out with Jackie McNamara, which is pretty cool. And all you need to do is, as I say, Jackie's dad played for Celtic. Simon Lynch's dad, Andy, played for Celtic. Mick Conroy's dad, also Michael Conroy, played for Celtic. And Gordon Marshall's dad, also Gordon, played for Celtic. Which current Celt's dad played for Celtic? That's the question. Email me at pauljohndykes@gmail.com and we will pick out a winner in amongst the emails that have come through so far. We're about 600 live on the stream this afternoon. Loads to look forward to. I'm going to throw something at you guys, right? No, literally, obviously, but John Kennedy, right? He's a guy that came in for so much stick during that pandemic season, the COVID season, right? He got so much stick, him and Gavin Strachan, didn't he? However, Ange Postecoglou has been bigging him up in recent times, and he's now been linked to the Hearts job to such a degree that Callum McGregor came out and spoke about the importance of John Kennedy behind the scenes. I remember Damien Duff leaving the club and going on about how good Kennedy was behind the scenes as a coach. Ange was waxing lyrical about him. First, I'm going to ask you, Lloyd, without Googling it, what age do you think John Kennedy is?
John Kennedy is 39 years of age.
He's looking at it on his screen, Peter.
I'm actually not. See, mobile phone, not unlocked. Nothing.
He is 39. And I sometimes think you forget that because he broke in as a player at 16. Mm-hmm. He broke in at 16. He's been in and around the club for so, so long. He's only 39, Peter. Will it come to a point where he himself thinks, I need to kind of break out and branch out on my own? Or is he going to be one of the figures that we've seen through Celtic history who's part of the backroom team, very, very important part of that backroom team, and loads of the other kind of elements of that team move around and shift about and leave the club, but he's part of the backbone? What do you make of all the kind of speculation around his future?
Well, if we can phone Daniel Levy and convince them, like Bill with Gerard, that it was really John Kennedy that was the mastermind behind Ange Postecoglou's success, then...
And Brendan's
as well. I know it's a hard one because, like, the longer he stays, you think, well, will he ever leave? Mm-hmm. And you sort of... I get the impression that he will eventually leave because I think you can only be a number two for so long, but maybe he's comfortable in that position. But when he has been linked to a few jobs in the past, and you get the impression that he probably will look to try his hand at management. That's just my impression. It wouldn't be a huge concern because I think Ange Postecoglou likes to change his backroom staff up quite a lot. So when you add those two things together, then it maybe make it more obvious that he might go out the door. When during the COVID season, when Gavin Strachan and John Kennedy were getting a lot of negative people talking about them, I think they were really fortunate a way that Ange came in because he really covered everything up. Like, even for the board was, I wouldn't call it lucky, but like they were, they couldn't have asked for a better manager to come in and just absolutely cover everything up. He took all the stress away and all the questions and stuff like that for the media. And slowly but surely, everything died down and you forgot about like Gavin Strachan and the issues that we were having with John Kennedy and stuff. So I think he's learned from Rodgers. He's learned from Ange Postecoglou. Two interesting styles of football. Two interesting coaches. So it would surprise me if he didn't want to go and try and put his stamp on his own team.
No, you're right. It must be an ambition. But then I've said in the past, in relation to that kind of figure behind the scenes, Lloyd, and I was really impressed that you knew he was 39, by the way. You know, 23 years after he made his debut for Celtic. That's wild.
Makes me feel old.
I definitely am old. But I do think, and it might be an element of romanticism, you know, that old boot room mentality where you look at the team that won in Lisbon, 56 years ago, and there was a boot room of Jock Steen, the gaffer, his assistant was Sean Fallon, ex-Celt, you know, played in the 7-1 game, played in the 53 Coronation Cup game. You've got Neely Mockin, who scored in all the games, ex-Celts, and you also had Bob Rooney, the physiotherapist, who had never qualified to be a physiotherapist, and the only bit of equipment he had was a heat lamp. Mm-hmm. And when he was putting the heat lamp on your leg, according to Tommy Callaghan, sometimes the cigarette ash would fall from his fag and land on your leg, and all this kind of stuff, bizarre. But I do like the romanticism of having a boot room mentality where you've got you've got constants, and then you've got variables. People change about, and I just like the fact now. And people might be thinking I'm an absolute hypocrite if you go back to some of the lockdown pods that we did. I like the fact that he's in and around there. And if you've been at the club during Brendan Rodgers, Ronnie Dyla, Neil Lennon, Ange Postecoglou, you've got something, haven't you?
Yeah, he definitely does. I think he's worked his way right through the academy, right up to the first team as well. So he's got that experience as well. We want with the younger players. And obviously, I think he's good friends with Steve McManus and that as well. So that ties in with the B team as well. So he's obviously got a good pedigree behind him. Do I think he'll eventually branch out in his own? I do think he will eventually. I don't know if it will still be in Scotland or what, but I do believe he will want to become a manager in his own right.
Yeah, he might be going to Shamrock Rovers, Coatbridge, who knows? I've seen that news breaking this morning. Listen, it's been really interesting. I don't think there's been knee-jerk reactions. Who knows what might happen tomorrow in the post-match if we don't get a win. I'm going to be pretty confident tomorrow. I think, like the tagline says, we're going to be back to our best tomorrow, because I think when it actually matters, Celtic can switch back on, and I get the momentum, I get all that. And I think Celtic are going to win, although I agree with Peter, it's going to be tight and it'll be by the odd goal. I'm going to say 2-1. What about yourself, Lloyd?
3-1.
3-1 Celtic. Yep. Lloyd, you won't be at the gig tonight, unfortunately, nope. Because you're working. Peter, we will get you along to as many as we possibly can so you can meet the rest of the team and a lot of the people who are going in for this competition. The competition question is to win two VIP tickets to see Jackie McNamara at Gracie's in Glasgow this evening. Which current Celt's dad played for Celtic? Jackie's dad obviously did, as did many, many others. And by the way, I'm going to throw another one in. Mm-hmm. Tyree Burchill. Tyree Burchill's dad played for Celtic because she's currently out on loan to Motherwell, but she is signed up with Celtic. I guess I can give you the answer now because it's the end of the show, right? And let's have a look. What have we got on the inbox? Oh, we've got about 10 or 12. Let it keep running. Let it keep running. I think everybody knows the answer, right? One of them gets called Holy Vata. And I think Junior Holy Vata, Senior Holy Vata. I think you know who it is. And you know what? We might even see a wee appearance from him tomorrow as well. Thank you, everybody, for getting involved. As always, Danielle, sorry we were late. I didn't think we were, but sorry we were late. And hopefully you can join us for the game footage tomorrow. All that's left for me to say, Lloyd Patrick Jepson, Peter McGackie, thank you for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Network. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.